Morning and welcome to each one. I invite you to take out your Bibles. You might go ahead and turn to Ezekiel chapter 3. I want to read a passage from there in just a little while. This morning I want to talk about the subject of evangelism. And certainly I would like to take just a moment to preface everything that I want to say this morning by expressing my thoughts as far as commending the congregation here, that although we are small in number, I think the congregation here is involved in more works of preaching the gospel than some congregations that I know of that are probably twice, three times or so the size. So I want to preface everything that I'm about to say by saying that first. But what we want to talk about is something just to encourage us to do more. If we're able to do more, and that's something we have to evaluate both on a congregational level and an individual level. And part of this study is not just to teach for everyone else here, but this is something that I wanted to think about as well and try to encourage me to do more. So again, I wanted to preface this lesson by saying that. I want to begin, though, by asking the question, well, why are many local churches of Christ not growing today? There are a lot of factors, I think, that we could talk about regarding that. And some things aren't necessarily in our control, that sometimes congregations are doing everything that they ought to be doing, but they don't grow, at least from a numerical perspective. So again, there are a lot of things that we could talk about regarding answering that question, but I'm sure that one of the reasons that many local churches of Christ are not growing today is due to the commitment that many congregations make in the area of evangelism. You know, it appears, as I think, in a very general sort of way, as I talk with different folks and visit different congregations and learn of things that congregations are doing, it appears that, you know, certainly congregations understand their responsibility to preach the gospel. They certainly are committed to a degree to do that, but it seems as if a lot of congregations are only partially committed in the area of evangelism. And then we often wonder why local churches throughout the world are not growing. Haggai chapter 2 and verse 19 is an interesting text. It's not an evangelism text, but it asks the question, is the seed still in the barn? And I think that's a question that's often applied in the area of evangelism, because the work of evangelism is like planting and sowing and watering a seed. And it's talked about that in at least a couple of different places. How can we expect God to give the increase numerically in congregations if we're not planting and watering the seed, if the seed is still in the barn, so to speak? It would be like a farmer expecting a harvest of crops in the fall after failing to plant the seed in the spring and tend to it in the summer. We understand it wouldn't happen. Well, it's only when we're diligent sowing the seed, even when it brings us to the point of tears. There's a passage in the Psalms. Again, not an evangelism passage, but you might just note and go back and read Psalm 126, verses 5 and 6. It talks about sowing in tears, and it's only when we sow in tears, even when it costs us something, that we can rejoice as we bring our sheaves with us during the time of harvest, as the passage alludes to. And we could apply that in numerous areas in our lives, but I think evangelism is one of those areas. How can we expect to bring in the sheaves, so to speak, if we're not diligent in sowing, even when it's costly to us? What I want to talk about this morning is an idea of be everywhere, and how I came to give this lesson that sort of title. There's an individual I listen to who is a business entrepreneur, and he puts out a weekly broadcast that you can go and listen to, and he tries to help other folks to grow their businesses, encourage them, and so forth. One of his broadcasts was simply entitled Be Everywhere, and it described his business strategy in that he wanted to make sure that throughout many different platforms that folks had the opportunity to connect with him, to learn about his product or services that he provides. So he talks about how he develops strategies for a podcast, if you're familiar with what that is. He has a website, he has a blog, and different social media platforms, and how he took advantage of all of these different opportunities to get his message out in front of the largest number of people possible and give people the opportunity to connect with him. And that's not just unique to him. This is a strategy used many places in the business world. You think about, this is the reason that businesses advertise. This is the reason, if you're on Facebook, you see businesses with Facebook pages, and why they send out mailings and all of these different things, because they want to keep their message or their product or their service in front of the greatest number of people. And you understand why. This is a smart business strategy. If a business would only utilize one area, that is, you know, perhaps there was a business with a physical location, and they erected this structure, put a sign out, and so forth. And if that's all that they did to try to attract people, how limited their reach would be. But if they would branch out in other areas to get their message to people in a much broader way, then that would result in more clients, and from a business perspective, it would result in a greater bottom line. This is, I believe, not just a successful business model. It's also a model, I believe, we see in the scriptures concerning how the early church spread the gospel's message. And I want to go through passages to illustrate that as we go through our study here this morning. And you think about the results of that. All right, as we go through these various passages here in just a little while, what were the results of what they were doing using this idea of, well, they're going to talk to as many people as they can. They're going to get the message out in as many ways as they possibly can. Well, the gospel of Christ was spread throughout the world. We'll talk about that a bit later. We think about the question of what is our responsibility in evangelism. And I know I've already talked about it, and it's often our focus. We often put our focus on numbers. That's really not our responsibility. That's not in our control. Our responsibility is simply to preach the saving message of the gospel, regardless of whether it is accepted or whether it is rejected. But there's still, that responsibility has often been neglected by local churches. I want to go to Ezekiel chapter 3. I would suggest that oftentimes Christians have failed as watchmen on the wall to warn about the impending danger to those who reject the gospel's message. Here, I want to read in Ezekiel 3, verses 16 through 21. Now, as I do this, this is not a passage about spreading the gospel. This is not a passage, obviously, here in the Old Testament. This is not part of the law we live under today. But I would suggest to you that there is great parallel between the work of Old Testament prophets and the work of Christians having the responsibility of preaching the gospel. There's great parallel, I believe, in that. Both have the responsibility of taking God's message to the people. Both have the responsibility of taking the warnings that God gives them to the people who need to hear the warnings. So with that in mind, let's read here in Ezekiel 3, beginning at verse 16. Now it came to pass at the end of 7 days that the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, I have made you a watchman for the house of Israel. Therefore hear a word from my mouth, and give them warning from me. When I say to the wicked, you shall surely die, and you give him no warning, nor speak to warn, nor speak to warn the wicked from his wicked way to save his life, that same wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood I will require at your hand. Yet if you warn the wicked, and he does not turn from his wickedness, nor from his wicked way, he shall die in his iniquity, but you have delivered your soul. Again, when a righteous man turns from his righteousness and commits iniquity, and I lay a stumbling block before him, he shall die. Because you did not give him warning, he shall die in his sin, and his righteousness which he has done shall not be remembered. But his blood I will require at your hand. Nevertheless, if you warn the righteous man that the righteous should not sin, and he does not sin, he shall surely live because he took warning. Also, you have delivered your soul. You know, we have the responsibility today to warn those who are in their sins concerning the consequences of dying in their sins. You think about the warning given in 2 Thessalonians 1, verses 7 through 9, about if those who reject the gospel of Christ, how they'll be eternally punished. And here in Ezekiel 3, we see that if Ezekiel warned the people of God's message, he would not be held responsible if they wouldn't listen, and even if they would be destroyed. He had cleansed himself, if you will, that he had fulfilled his part of the responsibility. But if Ezekiel failed to give them the warning from God, not only would they perish, but the text talks about how their blood would be required at Ezekiel's hand. He had failed in his responsibility to give the warning. Again, I suggest that there's great parallel in that and in our responsibility in preaching the gospel's message. It seems as if most people in communities today know nothing about the Church of Christ or the true teachings of the gospel. And we understand that this is not a failure of God, but oftentimes it's a failure of those who are God's people. And how can we, as Christians and those who know the message of the gospel, those who understand the warnings of the gospel, how can we sit back and simply not give warning to people who are living their lives in a way that will result in their spending eternity in hell? And then we need to evaluate on an individual level. And again, I'm speaking to myself as well. We need to evaluate, do we really think that when we stand before God on the day of judgment, that He'll not hold us responsible if we're failing to spread His message of warning to the people? What we want to do today is to learn about how the gospel was effectively spread in the first century. Then we want to make evaluations of these principles today and be encouraged to be everywhere and what that might look like in our lives. Again, I suggest this is a successful model in evangelism. There's a pattern for evangelism. There's a pattern in the New Testament regarding so many things. And we need to make sure that we hold fast to the pattern in the language of 2 Timothy 1, verse 13. And this is true in a number of different ways, and certainly there is a lot of generic authority regarding the teaching of the gospel and how that's to be accomplished. There's a lot of generic authority for that. But we also need to be careful that we don't venture into areas that are unauthorized. And there's an article in the bulletin today about that, written by Andy Soker. A lot of folks in their desire to spread the gospel's message to as many people as possible have went into areas that are unauthorized to doing so. We have to be careful not to go into that way. But we do want to consider this pattern and think about how the gospel was so effectively spread in the first century. And I want to learn first from the master teacher in the book of John, Jesus Christ himself, in John chapter 4. And we won't read this whole section, but you could read the first 42 verses of John 4. In fact, I'd encourage you to do that. There's a lot we can learn about evangelism from Jesus in this passage. In verses 5 through 9, just to notice the setting here, he came to the city of Samaria, or a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near the plot of ground that Jacob gave his son Joseph. Now Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, therefore, being wearied from his journey, sat thus by the well. It was about the sixth hour. A woman of Samaria came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Then the woman of Samaria said to him, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." And again, keep on reading in that passage, but I want you to notice this was as unnatural of an evangelistic opportunity as they come. Here's Jesus, a Jewish man who would have customarily had no dealings with Samaritans, and then let alone that the fact that she was a woman, there were all sorts of barriers here. But and even beyond that, beyond those social, if you will, barriers, you notice some other barriers that there were to evangelism here. You notice how this was the sixth hour around in our culture. We would understand that to be about around noon, if I understand right, and that would be about lunchtime in our culture. You notice how the disciples had went away to buy food. You notice how Jesus is thirsty. You notice how Jesus is wearied from his journey. All of these things, when you take them together, you know, you think this is not what we might think about a prime opportunity to spread the gospel's message. But you notice how Jesus took advantage of the opportunity. You read this story, you see how he overcame all of those barriers, how he taught this woman, told her what she needed to know, and it resulted in not only the woman coming to a place of believing in Christ, but also she went back and she told others about this one, the Christ, who she had just talked with, and how they came to believe in him through her. Again, you think about how he didn't allow any of these barriers to prevent the spreading of the message that he came to tell. You go to Mark 16, and here's the commission that Jesus gave to his apostles, as they were given a very specific instruction. As Jesus, the master teacher, he wasn't going to be with them any longer. He was going to ascend into heaven, but the responsibility of spreading the gospel still was very much an important thing that needed to be done. And he gave that responsibility to his disciples. And he said to them, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature." Now, we'll observe how they went about doing that as we go through the lesson, at least some passages. We certainly won't consider everything on that. But I want us to be encouraged to understand that this responsibility has been handed down to us today. They were successful in spreading the gospel's message, as we'll see in a little while, to those during their society or their generation at that time. But today there's a whole new generation that needs to hear the message of the gospel. And according to Romans 10, verses 13 through 18, as it gives a progression, it tells us that folks need to call upon the name of the Lord in order to be saved. We know that includes baptism, that's obedience to the gospel. But it tells us this progression. Well, how can they do that if they haven't believed? And how can they believe if they haven't heard? And how can they hear if there's no one to preach to them? And how can they preach unless they're sent? If we'll not preach that message of salvation to this new generation, almost 2,000 years after the lifetime of the apostles, who will? You know, maybe a Jehovah's Witness will knock on those individuals' doors. And I know that they're active in this community. They stop by our house with some frequency. And from talking with one Jehovah's Witness in particular in this area, he's told me they're out every Saturday in the community. They're knocking on doors, teaching that there is no hell, teaching that Jesus really isn't God, along with a whole host of other false doctrines. Or if we'll not preach the message to them, maybe a Baptist will teach them that they don't need to be baptized in order to be saved, and that once they become quote-unquote Christians, that they're once saved, always saved. Or maybe a Catholic will talk with them and tell them that they need to follow the instructions of the Pope. Now, we can't leave this great work up to those who are teaching false gospels. In Acts chapter 8, we've been studying this just recently. In Acts chapter 8, of course, there were those early Christians who were scattered due to the persecution brought about by Saul. In Acts 8, verse 4, "Therefore, those who were scattered went everywhere preaching the word." Wherever they went. You know, previously the gospel had been spread in Judea, but now due to the persecution and their being scattered from that region, going into other parts of the world, you see, they took the gospel with them. They went everywhere preaching the word. And it led to the salvation of souls in other regions. You follow Philip into Samaria, and you see conversions that are taking place there, and then the man of Ethiopia a bit later in chapter 8. You know, and although it may never be true of us that we're ever scattered because of persecution, it may be, but it may never be the case, but still we can imitate their good example to go everywhere preaching the word, whether we go to the grocery store, whether we go to visit our family, whether we go to our place of business or wherever we are, we can go everywhere preaching the word. In Acts chapter 5, I want to see what's said in verse 42 concerning the apostles there. And then we'll jump over to chapter 20 and see a very similar statement made by the apostle Paul. In Acts 5 and verse 42, "And daily in the temple and in every house, they did not cease teaching and preaching Jesus as the Christ." Jump over to chapter 20. Paul's meeting with the elders in Ephesus, and he talks about his prior work among them in preaching the gospel. He says, "How I kept back nothing that was helpful, but proclaimed it to you and taught you publicly and from house to house." You know, the apostles did that. They taught publicly. They taught from house to house. You know what that did? That gave individuals the opportunity to come and hear the gospel's message, but they also fulfilled the commission Jesus had given them to go to the people and teach them. You know, there's a lot of people who won't come and hear. We need to go to them. And we need to utilize these same avenues today to both invite folks to come and hear the gospel and to go to those folks who won't come, telling them why they need to learn the gospel's message. Acts chapter 17, if you want to go there, these two passages up on the board really describe to us the responses to the preaching of the gospel's message. And I think these responses help us to see how they were going everywhere preaching the gospel. Acts 17 and verse 6, "Concerning them it was said, these who have turned the world upside down have come here too." In chapter 19 and verse 26, it was said concerning the Apostle Paul. You remember when a riot had broke out there in Ephesus by a silversmith, caused really by the silversmith. And he said concerning Paul that he has persuaded and turned away many people, that is, from serving idols and specifically from Diana, saying that they are not gods which are made with hands. Now you think about how these individuals who weren't friends of the gospel, but were enemies of the gospel and opposing the work of these who were preaching, you think about what these passages tell us about their work. And then you make application of that. You know, do you suppose folks in these communities, from passages like these, do you think they didn't know about the Church of Christ? Do you think they didn't know about the teaching of the gospel, or at least have opportunity to hear it? And then, you know, I wonder, you know, do we have those who would speak evil of us? And then if we do have those who would speak evil of us, would they accuse us of, well, these people are turning the world upside down? Or would they look at us and say, well, they just sort of go along to get along? Let's go to 1 Timothy chapter 3 and Paul's writing to Timothy. Paul simply wrote, "But if I am delayed, I write so that you may know how you ought to conduct yourself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of truth. One version says the pillar and support of the truth. That's the church. That's God's people. His church, His people have the responsibility of holding up and proclaiming the message of salvation. Remember, Jesus taught that it's the truth that will set folks free from their sins in John 8, verse 24. And again, I ask the question, if God's people won't do as this passage says, they won't hold up the truth, they won't proclaim the truth, who will? You know, Satan's going to fill that void. Satan may capture the hearts and minds of folks who need to hear the gospel by perhaps diverting their attention to worldly things. Or Satan perhaps will make sure that they have access to somebody who's going to teach them a false gospel. They might have a form of religion but not really be saved from their sins. It's God's people who must stand up and boldly proclaim the word of truth. We need to be preaching when we have opportunity to do so. I want to go to a good example of a congregation over in 1 Thessalonians 1, a congregation that was actively involved in preaching the message of salvation to the people. 1 Thessalonians 1, verse 8. For from you, he's writing to the church in Thessalonica, for from you the word of the Lord has sounded forth, not only in Macedonia and Achaia, but also in every place. Your faith toward God has gone out so that we do not need to say anything. I don't know whether there's a better example of a local church preaching the gospel in the scriptures than this passage. You think about what they had accomplished according to this text. The word of the Lord was spread in their community, but not just in their community, but even beyond that, throughout different parts of the world. Now, how would you do that? Just relative to spreading it beyond your community. Well, maybe folks from Thessalonica, the Christians there, as they traveled different places and they took the word of the Lord and they went everywhere preaching the gospel still. That spreads the gospel. Or individuals who come into the area of Thessalonica, perhaps having the opportunity to learn the message there, then return to wherever they're from, taking the message with them. But what a good model for every local church to imitate. We need to have an impact in our local community, certainly, through the gospel, but then even beyond that, as we have opportunity to do so, then we need to evaluate whether this sort of thing could be said of us. Then I want to go to one other passage before we move on, and that's over to Colossians 1, verse 23. Now, as we read this, remember the commission that Jesus gave to His apostles in Mark 16, verse 16, to go into the world, preach the gospel to every creature. Now, here's about 30 years after Jesus gave the Great Commission, and here's what Paul wrote. If indeed you continue in the faith, grounded and steadfast, and are not moved away from the hope of the gospel which you heard, which was preached to every creature under heaven, of which I, Paul, became a minister. He says, essentially, that work that Jesus had given them, they'd done it. Now, that didn't mean they were going to stop. They still needed to continue to preach the message, but the message had been spread. Now, how did they do that? We need to think about some things they didn't have that we have today. You know, they didn't start out with some large number of people to spread the message throughout the world. They started with the apostles. We read about 120 in Acts chapter 1. So we need not be discouraged when we think about that we're not a large congregation here. You know, the gospel started to be spread throughout the world using 120 people in Acts chapter 1. They didn't have the modern conveniences we have today to make our travel quicker and easier. They didn't have the modern technology that makes spreading a message so easy as it is today, like the telephone or the internet or whatever. But they did have a zeal to spread the message wherever they went. And that's worth much more than any modern convenience is worth. Sometimes I wonder, what would Paul have done if he could have gotten in a car or flew in an airplane? Or what would he have done if he could have wrote an email or called someone on the phone or put a post on Facebook? Next, I want to think about, observe some, what I would designate as common problems with today's evangelistic models. Now, as we get into this, I want to be very careful in prefacing this. We've just looked at the scripture, the pattern. What I'm about to comment on here, this is my thoughts, my observations, and opinions to try to help us as we think about applying the things that we've had to say. I try to be very careful not to preach my opinions, and I want to make sure that you understand that's all this is, in trying to apply the things that are said. You may not agree with it, and that's perfectly fine. This is an opinion. But I do want to help us think about some of these things in ways that we often try to spread the gospel compared to the things we've just observed when it was very successful. Sometimes we see that congregations are often either afraid or unwilling to change from traditional methods of evangelism. Now again, please understand my point. I'm not talking about changing the message. I'm not talking about changing to go into some area that's unauthorized. We cannot do that. We must not do that. But there are certain methods that have been utilized, perhaps even successfully in the past, that are not as effective today. And we simply need to be willing to evaluate those things, those ways we've went about things. Maybe there's a better way to get the message to people today. But a lot of times the thought is, well, this is the way we've always done it, and that's the way that we should continue to do that. But that said, too, we shouldn't just change a tradition because for the sake of it having been a tradition. We need to simply evaluate the ways we spread the gospel and determine to be the most effective in doing so. Something else that I observe is that oftentimes church buildings are seen as sort of the center of all evangelism efforts. You know, a lot of congregations, everything they do evangelistically centers around the building. They often will, their evangelistic efforts are inviting folks to come, like to gospel meetings and so forth. And there's certainly nothing wrong with saying come. It's scriptural to say come, and we ought to, I believe. I think gospel meetings are a good thing. I'm not among those who are calling for the end of gospel meetings as they have been. I'm certainly a supporter of having gospel meetings. My point simply is, we can't just be saying come. We also need to recognize the fact that many people who need to hear the gospel would be hesitant to come into an assembly where they've never been before, who know nothing about the congregation. We need to think about that and think about how we might be able to reach those folks who may not even understand why they ought to come to an assembly of a local church of Christ. And to remember that Jesus said for us to go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. That was the successful model that we saw. And my point is, again, not that we shouldn't use the church building. This is a great resource here. And we have opportunities to invite folks to come and hear, and hopefully we'll be doing that with the gospel meeting. That's one way of spreading the gospel. My point is that we need to be doing both saying come and to going to folks to try to teach them in other ways. There's also something that I often observe, and that's that other things are considered to be more important than reaching the lost. And I understand, evangelism is not the only work of a local church. We also have the responsibility to edify. We also have the responsibility of benevolence toward those who are Christians. My point simply is that evangelism must not take a back seat. That evangelism is not the least important of our works. if anything, it may be given the most significant place in Scripture, but it's certainly not the least. But local churches have often had a tendency to be involved in many different things besides or at the expense of serious evangelistic work. You know, there is a tendency in many different places to spend a lot of time and money and focus on the building. And that needs to be done. Don't misunderstand my point. We need to be good stewards of what we have here and the building and not neglect the building. But we also have to make sure to always maintain a balance. A lot of times there are congregations who focus nearly exclusively on things regarding physical structures and so forth. The question I would ask is simply this: what good is a building if there's no one who worships God in it? My point simply is, let's not make evangelism take a back seat. A lot of congregations are guilty of doing that. Something else that I'd simply like to suggest as an observation is that a lot of times there's a tendency for churches to roll out programs and so forth that we might describe as sort of a one-size-fits-all approach, that there are programs that are rolled out by congregations, whether congregational door-to-door efforts or mailings or whatever, and I'm not against any of those things. I'm not against congregational programs to spread the gospel, where we work collectively and use collective funds and those sorts of things, and doing things that are authorized. But we also need to be careful that we don't fall into, well, we put all of our resources and all that we do in evangelism just in one avenue. And that's what I'm talking about really when I'm suggesting this sort of be everywhere strategy. I know we have limited funds and resources and so forth, but let's try to find a way to utilize those to be in as many different places with the gospel as we can possibly be, to provide the greatest number of people with the opportunity to learn and obey the gospel. And I'll suggest a few things here after in the next section as we continue to make applications of these things. And here's one other thing before we move on to our last point. One common problem is that every Christian is not preaching. You know, typically speaking, the greatest numerical growth in local congregations will not come through some mailing or some door-to-door effort or something like that. That's not to say we shouldn't do those things. Typically, the greatest success in terms of folks responding to the gospel occurs when every member goes to those they have a relationship with and tries to teach them. Now, again, we don't have personal relationships with everyone we need to be teaching, so there is a place for these other ways as well. God intends for every Christian to be a preacher of His saving message. You know, there's been a phrase that's been used for years, and that's each one, win one. And that's still a good thought, that if we all just go out with the mindset of we're going to try to find someone who wants to listen, and it may take us thousands to find that one individual, but we try to find one person to bring to Christ, and then if that happens, we go on, we try to find someone else. But that's often lacking in a congregation. And we need to be thinking about that on an individual level. Invite folks to study the Bible. Invite folks to come to our gospel meetings or whatever it might be. In the last section here of our study, I just want to, again, take what we've studied. Think about, well, how can we make application of this? You know, what do all of these things mean for us? Again, we need to be following the first century model. That was a model that was successful. They spread the gospel throughout the world. Again, forget about numbers, because it's not about numbers. They spread the gospel throughout the world. We have the responsibility of spreading the gospel. What was this model? Well, you go through the scriptures, you see that the model involved God's people being dedicated to spreading the good news wherever they went and whenever they had an opportunity to do so. You see that every Christian was a preacher of the gospel in passages like Acts 8 and verse 4, 2 Timothy 2 verses 24 to 26. You see, local churches were dedicated to sending out preachers to preach the gospel in their communities and in other areas. You see individuals who dedicated their lives to the preaching of the gospel, and they got their livelihood through that as well. If we want to be successful today in evangelism, let's follow that first century model. What's involved in this? We need to be zealous for the lost. In the book of Titus, in chapter 2, and in verse 14, it's a very general statement here that is made, but it tells us we need to be zealous. Talking of Christ, it says, "Who gave Himself for us, that He might redeem us from every lawless deed, and purify for Himself His own special people, zealous for good works." Well, we know that one of the good works we ought to be zealous for is in reaching the lost with the gospel of Christ. Because Jesus gave His life for us, we need to be zealous for all good works. That's what He expects of His people. But some congregations won't be zealous in the work of evangelism. Maybe they're going through the motions, perhaps like the church in Ephesus in Revelation 2, verses 1 through 7. The church there in Ephesus had left its first love. Maybe they were just maybe kind of going through the motions with things, but they weren't really fervently serving the Lord. Or maybe congregations may be lukewarm in their service to God, like those in Laodicea in Revelation 3, verses 14 through 21, who were neither hot nor cold, but were lukewarm in service to God. Or maybe congregations can be like the church in Sardis that had a name as if it were alive, but was actually spiritually dead, Revelation 3, verses 1 through 6. I want you to go to Acts chapter 17. We need to imitate, certainly not those examples in Scripture, but we need to imitate the positive examples of how the gospel was spread and congregations and individuals who went about with this zeal for the lost. I think about the Thessalonians in 1 Thessalonians 1 verse 8, as we talked about earlier. That congregation had spread the message, the word of the Lord, not only in their community, but also throughout the world, through other regions as well. Acts 17, here's an example of Paul, and Paul's alone in the city of Athens as we read this. And it says, "Now while Paul waited for them at Athens, his spirit was provoked within him when he saw the city was given over to idols." Paul couldn't stand idly by and say nothing. And you keep reading with this in mind, and you go down through and how he teaches them about the God they did not know. It's my concern that many Christians, and myself even included at various times, can stand back and say nothing when we know of individuals who are living in sin. Before we close, I want to suggest four ways that I think we see in the Bible that we can spread the gospel. And just a few things for you to think about in this regard as well. The first way we'd think about private teaching, one-on-one teaching. That's a way we need to utilize in spreading the gospel, and part of how we can be everywhere. That each individual, maybe invite a friend or neighbor or family member to study the Bible. You know, just personally, one of the ways I've found people to be receptive to spread to learning the gospel, just ask them if they like to study the Bible and if they'd be willing to have a Bible study course, even if it's them taking it in their own home, and then follow up with them after you give them something to think about. You could hand them invitations or just your conversations, as we see Jesus in John chapter 4. But private one-on-one teaching is one way we can spread the gospel. The second might be what we might refer to as semi-private teaching. Maybe we have a family Bible study with those even in our family who aren't Christians, or maybe a neighborhood Bible study. I know there was a book that before I got here, but there was a book that I guess was gone through here in a class where it was suggested to have neighborhood Bible studies, and I was intrigued as I thought about the things that that individual, that author suggested. But that's certainly one way we could do it. We could, even if we don't feel comfortable teaching those classes, just invite those folks, have somebody else teach it, or you can utilize technology to view Bible study DVDs or online videos. You could have internet studies even now as we utilize technology. A third way I believe we see in scriptures concerning teaching the gospel is house-to-house teaching. We don't have personal relationships with everyone, and we're not going to have personal relationships with everyone who needs to hear the gospel. That's where we try to get the message to people in their homes, whether that's through door-to-door, whether that's through mailings, or any number of things that could be done. And then the fourth way I think we can teach the gospel is through public teaching. These are opportunities for that. Gospel meetings are great opportunities for that. We work at the fair, and that's been a tremendous opportunity. Other public events, we can utilize online resources that so many take advantage of now. Websites and blogs and social media. If you're on Facebook, you can take advantage of these sorts of opportunities. You could do a number of things that are in a public sense to preach the gospel. What I want to get across today before we close is to be everywhere, as I believe we saw with the early Christians. They took advantage of whatever opportunities that they seemed to have to spread the message of the gospel. We need to be diligent to take advantage of whatever opportunities we have to spread the gospel, both individually and collectively. It's not about picking one of these areas, but it's about taking advantage of as many of them as we possibly can, utilizing whatever tools and resources and abilities that we have as individuals to spread the message of the gospel. As we close, I want you to go to Colossians 4. And we're going to read a passage there in just a moment. We need to ask ourselves the question, do we desire to fulfill our responsibilities to preach the message of the gospel? You know, this is not something that's reserved for a few, or this is something we're all called to be involved in. Remember, sin is the violation, the transgression of God's laws, and He's told us that we're expected to be preaching His message. It's part of what we ought to be doing and what we must be doing as Christians. And I hope that 1 Thessalonians 1 verse 8 can be said of us collectively. We need to just be thinking about how can we be more effective in spreading the message of the gospel? How can we be in as many different places as we can possibly be to make sure that the message of salvation is reaching the most number of people and being the most effective as we can be? Colossians 4, beginning at verse 2, Paul writes, "Continue earnestly in prayer, being vigilant in it with thanksgiving. Meanwhile, praying also for us that God would open to us a door for the word, to speak the mystery of Christ, for which I am also in chains, that I may make it manifest as I ought to speak. Walk in wisdom toward those who are outside, redeeming the time. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one." There's a whole study in that text concerning evangelism, but the point I want us to see. First, we ought to remember the place of prayer in evangelism, praying that God would open a door for the Word. Pray that we would take advantage of those opportunities that He opens up to us, and then that, not just that we're praying for it, but that we're willing to take advantage of those opportunities. We need to walk in wisdom toward those who are not Christians, those who are outside. Redeem the time. Make the most use of the time that God has given us to spread His message. And hopefully something in what we've studied here this morning will help us do that. Again, as we prepare to offer the invitation, I hope that the lesson simply encourages us to think about individually and collectively how we can do more and make the greatest impact for the gospel in this community and beyond. We're going to sing the song of encouragement, song number 284, here in just a moment. We haven't talked about the gospel's message itself, but certainly why we need to be spreading it is because it is the message of salvation. It's the message that folks need to hear about the God who loved them so much, who sent His only begotten Son to die for them, that they might have the home in heaven, they might not suffer eternally in hell, and that there's something that God's required of them that they have to do in order to be saved from their sins, to hear His word and believe and repent, to confess Christ and be baptized, and to be faithful all the days of their lives. That's really the message of the gospel. If we can help someone here, as you think about your life and maybe you've not been living in a way that's pleasing to God, if we can help you, then we invite you at this time to come forward and have a seat on the front while together we stand and while we sing.